This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Let's see if we can. We also want to talk, before we let you go today, we're going to talk about what's going on, the political shenanigans behind the scenes, what's going on with Dominion and our electricity prices and the deregulation, regulation, what's happening. But first, let's talk about transportation. What's your take on what's been happening in Richmond?
Well, it's been a battle royale down in the General Assembly. You're absolutely right. It has dominated the entire proceedings. And it's going to cost us, exactly like you said, it's going to cost us all in our pocketbooks one way or the other. Every single plan out there, even the kind of the low tax wing of the Republican Party is basically kind of, I would say they capitulated to some degree in order to form a compromise with the high tax wing of the Republican Party over in the Senate. So, they've come together with a grand compromise that combine some good elements that the state had worked on that would reform VDOT and reform land use and put in some money from general fund surplus, along with some of the tax increases that some of the senators have been looking for. So it's a bit of a monstrosity, but now the Republicans will be able to go back when they get during their campaigns this fall and say, look, we came up with something, we came up with a big compromise, we can govern, and we can come up with solutions for transportation. That's the claim they'll be able to make. Whether the voters buy it is another issue.
Jim Bacon is our guest of Bacon's Rebellion, and that's online at baconsrebellion.blogspot.com. Jim, I'd like to read to you something that you wrote recently on your blog and just have you sort of flesh this out for us. And this is an important point because I think a lot of folks are thinking that, they want to raise taxes in the Senate. Those Republicans over there, they're more to the center, and they want a statewide 5% new brand new gas tax. So not 5% per gallon, but a 5% of the total that you pay at the pump. And the folks in the House, they don't want any taxes, but that's actually not true. And you wrote that the GOP proposes increases auto registration fees, boosting the tax on diesel fuel, taking $250 million from the general fund instead of rebating the surplus, and there is one, to taxpayers, and giving regional authorities in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads power to impose their own grab bag of taxes, which down in Hampton Roads, it would mean a brand new tax on commercial real estate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why I said that even the low tax wing of the Republican Party in the House has, to greater or lesser degree, kind of capitulated on the issue of taxes. They've just been kind of bulldozed into it. And their goal, what they're coming out and claiming is, well, we didn't raise a statewide general tax. We didn't raise the sales tax, income tax, or the gas tax. Okay, congratulations, guys. You didn't do that. But you raised a whole bunch of other taxes. And my big objection to that, even though I think there's elements of the GOP plan that I think are worth saving, my big objection is, at least with advantage of the gas tax, it's transparent. You fill up your gas tank every week, you know that you're getting taxed, and you can see it. And if you want to, if you don't like paying a tax, then you can at least make some sort of adjustments, accommodations, like maybe you can carpool once in a while or telecommute or ride a bus. Whereas the Republican plan is like, we're going to spread the taxes around here, there, and everywhere in little bits and pieces so you can't even see it, you don't even know it's there. So you're going to get taxed, you just won't be able to see it, you won't be able to do anything about it. So that's my big problem with their plan.
And you write on your blog that the end result, of course, is that the Republican compromise package actually subsidizes those who drive the most, those who contribute the most to traffic congestion, at the expense of those who drive the least.
That's my argument. I don't see this registering with anybody in the General Assembly, but I think you can make the case that's so, because when you tax all these different miscellaneous sources, the money comes from everybody. It doesn't matter whether you drive, you're a little old granny that drives 3,000 miles a year, or whether you're, a road warrior who drives his Humvee around, $30,000 a year. You're all going to pay in the same basis. So regardless of how much wear and tear you put on the roads. And regardless of how much you clog up the interstates during rush hour traffic, you're going to pay basically the same as the little old granny. And it will never solve the transportation congestion until we get people to begin actually paying the costs associating with their driving behavior. I just firmly believe that, but it's not a message that seems to resonate with anyone in General Assembly.
Jim Bacon is our guest of baconsrebellion.blogspot.com. We had a caller in the last hour asking about, the hot lane fees. You know, if you want to travel in a faster lane at rush hour, you ought to pay a little bit more. Does that exist anywhere in Virginia right now?
It's under serious consideration. There are a couple of proposals up along I-95, the I-95 corridor in northern Virginia, all the way down to Fredericksburg, and they're also talking about implementing that in the Washington Beltway. So that is, I think it's a great idea. I mean, people kind of scoff at them, call them Lexus lanes. It's congestion-free lanes for the rich. But it's not just the rich. Anybody can pay for it. So if you're just a working bloke, a working Joe, but say you're running late to pick up your kid after daycare, well, okay, you don't normally take the Lexus lane, but if you're in a hurry, you're under time pressure, you can pay, and it gives you an option. You don't have to get stopped and caught up in congestion. So it provides an option for everybody.
Jim, I think one of the most interesting things, just on a totally cynical political level here, is that we're going to see a lot of Republicans running this year, running for their seats again, incumbents in the Senate and in the House, saying that they stopped taxes to pay for transportation, when in fact that's not true.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sad. Exactly right.
We're talking with Jim Bacon. Let's take a very quick break. And when we get back, we're going to turn our attention to Dominion Virginia Power and the chance that your rates are about to go up. A good chance. This is Charlotte Chill right now. We're talking with Jim Bacon of Bacon's Rebellion, one of the more cerebral blogs here in the Commonwealth. Jim, let's turn our attention to Dominion Virginia Power. And this can be a little confusing, I want to say at the outset. So folks may want to sit down, but we're talking about your checkbook here and the bills that you pay to turn the light on in your house. What's going on, Jim?
Well, first let me say the good news about Virginia Power, and that is the rates have been frozen since 1996, and they've been frozen at 1993 rates. Now, that's what most people have kind of forgotten about that. You normally don't think about your electric bill unless it goes up or unless the lights go off. But very quietly, Dominion has been keeping our electric rates steady for a long, long time. Now, that's going to change because the partial deregulation that was put in place allowed for the rate caps to come off at the very end of 2010. And fuel prices have gone up and other things have gone up, and Dominion has got to, they're running short of electric generating capacity, so they're going to have to build some expensive new plants. And a lot of people are worried that what happened up in Maryland when the rate cap came off is going to happen here in Virginia, too. And in Maryland, depending on the electric utility you were getting your power from, rates went up anywhere between 30 and 70%. So, I mean, they just went ballistic up there, and I'm not sure exactly what they did, but they could have promptly put re-regulation back into place. So people are very concerned that something similar will happen here. And started making a lot of noises. And then what Dominion did, I think very shrewd on their part, they said, well, we know the hammer's going to come down. So they submitted their own version of legislation that would basically submit themselves to re-regulation, except they did it as much in their own kind of on their own terms that would benefit them as possible. And some of the ideas they had were actually pretty good. It wouldn't be a return to the old days of long ago, but it would definitely, the State Corporation Commission would have a major hand in saying what Dominion, how much money they could earn and how much they would charge.
Have any citizens groups been in on this conversation? Or is it just Dominion working with legislators to figure out how Dominion's going to be regulated?
Well, that's kind of interesting. I haven't been following it, tracking it super closely, but I did attend one of the key hearings, and I've been talking to people. And my impression is that the citizens groups actually do have a voice at the table. What they did is Dominion submitted its legislation, and then the General Assembly got a hold of it and said, look, we want to chew this over. So they created a working group of constituents or stakeholders is what they call them. So that was the all the other power companies besides Dominion and the independent power companies. It was also the manufacturers and big industrial customers, so the big payers of electric bills, as well as the attorney general who represents rate holder the consumers, and a couple of rate shareholder groups, citizens groups, and they all got together and they massaged this over. And My take on it is whatever they come up with at the end of the day is going to represent a balance of these different groups. And so there's going to be, you know how it is, it's all a big compromise game. There's going to be protections, certainly more protections for consumers than there would have been had we done nothing. Some consumers will never be happy, and they say Dominion's getting away with murder, but it's going to be a compromise. The people who aren't getting represented at this are the environmentalists, the conservationists, and those people who look down the road to something, you know, farther than just the next rate hike, and people who kind of look for kind of next generation of electric power system. With looking at concepts like renewable energy, distributed grid, power generation grids, and conservation in particular.
And that's a conversation that the Commonwealth isn't really having seriously right now, is it?
Hardly anybody's having that conversation. They're certainly not having that conversation in the legislature. Well, the one thing they are talking about a little bit is renewable energy. And unfortunately, the bill that's been submitted there is would mandate a renewable energy portfolio for power producers that will require a minimum amount of green energy sources like wind and solar and things like that. It sounds wildly ambitious to me. They're talking about up to 10 or 12% of total energy supplies coming from these sources within the next 10 or 15 years, 15, 20 years. And I don't think it's possible. I just don't think. And so it would be a huge hardship. And what happens is these energy sources also happen to be much more expensive. The technology just isn't there yet. They will be one day, but they're not there yet. And so if you want to keep rates low, you're not going to do it by mandating these renewable fuels.
Jim Bacon is the editor and founder of Bacon's Rebellion blog online at baconsrebellion.blogspot.com, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you'd like to sound off about Dominion Power, the good, the bad, and the ugly, so I guess the long and the short of it is our rates are going to go up.
I don't see how that's going to be anything but avoidable. It's just unavoidable, yeah. They're going to go up. The question is how much are they going to go up?
God forbid they go up like Maryland's did. In the Eastern Shore, they went up 75%.
Well, no, they're not likely to go up anywhere near badly as Maryland's did. One reason is that Maryland deregulated or uncapped their rates at the worst possible time. It's right at the peak of the energy, you know, the high gas prices and oil prices, and natural gas prices have gone through the roof, and coal prices have doubled, and they just got clobbered. Those prices have backed off to a significant degree now. And the other thing, at least with Dominion, Dominion has a pretty sophisticated fuel procurement program, which is something that came out as a result of the deregulation phase they were in. They didn't have this back when they were regulated. It used to be they just passed on the cost. They didn't care. But now they do all sorts of sophisticated buying strategies. They go to multiple sources. They use hedges. They do all sorts of things. So it's unavoidable that the rate's going to go up, but hopefully they can modify that. Now, in the long run, it's not just fuel prices. Dominion has talked about they're going to need to undergo, after having built virtually nothing other than very, very small peak power load plants, they're going to have to build $4 billion on new coal and or nuclear power plants. over the next 15 years or so. And that's going to be very expensive. And someone's going to have to pay for that. And it's going to be the ratepayers. And the new generation of stuff, it's going to be, they're going to have to load that all into the rate base. And so the question then is, how much should we build all this new stuff? Or should we be putting into place programs that would encourage people to conserve and reward people for conserving, so maybe we don't have to build quite so much?
And new infrastructure is because of the growth in Virginia?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're one of the fastest growing areas in terms of electric demand in Virginia Power's, Dominion's entire wholesale energy market. They belong to this group called PJM, which includes 50 million people or so. And Northern Virginia in particular, I mean, they're just going gangbusters. Not only is in population increasing, but what they're doing is building all these great big huge server farms, just these warehouses of servers that kind of process stuff on the internet, and these things are just huge electricity hogs. So Dominion is anticipating more of these.
Jim Bacon, it's always an honor, my friend. I appreciate you spending some time with us.
Hey, thanks for giving me a call, Corey. I love talking to you, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Jim Bacon is the founder and editor of the Bacon's Rebellion blog, and it's online at baconsrebellion.blogspot.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.